Think about some writers who have cranked out a bunch of books over the years. Stephen King comes to mind. He's published more than 50 novels, and that is just a fraction of the output of our next guest. David Robbins lives in the Rogue River area and writes constantly. At least we assume he does, because to date he's had more than 300 books published, mostly genre fiction, heavy on the science fiction and Western. That still leaves him a bit short of L. Ron Hubbard, who's credited with more than 1,000 books, but it's impressive nonetheless. David's written more books than many people have read, and he has written both fiction and nonfiction under a bunch of names, including David Thompson, Jake McMasters, John Sharp, Don Pendleton, Franklin Dixon, Ralph Compson, Dean L. McElwain, J.D. Cameron, and John Killdeer. Under all those names, David Robbins, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the studio here.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So it appears that L. Ron Hubbard has you beat for most books published. Are you planning on starting a religion yourself?
No. I understand that that was original brainstorm with him. He went from segued from being a writer to starting his own religion, but I have no desire to follow in his footsteps.
So there's just one of you? There's no team of David helpers? There's no people in a back shop somewhere cranking out the stuff and you just style it or something?
Just David. Yes, wow. That's all. Mm-hmm. No team. I wish. May I ask you a question?
Sure.
The incongruity has me mystified. Why is there a John Deere heavy loader truck next to your microphone?
I was going to ask about your career, so you've already indicated an inquisitiveness. And
otherwise,
and
I'll be pondering this the whole show, wondering why you have it.
All right, the story of the John Deere dump truck.
Yes, please.
Which will end up in a book, I hope, at some point. It is a dump truck.
Yes.
Because we work on a 10-second delay in case somebody drops an F-bomb, the box is labeled with a button that says dump. And it makes the last 4 seconds disappear. And on one occasion when I forgot what to say, I was just like motioning because somebody had actually dropped an S-bomb on the air. And I was gesticulating wildly. And the student assistant was just looking at me like, what do you mean? And I couldn't remember the word dump. He went on Christmas break the next month and came back with this John Deere dump truck. And that was Noah Jacobs was his name and has been in the studio ever since from about 2010 on.
Well, so much of my surmise that you were possibly a heavy equipment operator and freeway segued into radio.
No, okay. But that gets back to your earlier careers. You were in radio, not a heavy equipment operator either, I gather.
I was in radio for a number of years, yes. Mm-hmm. Enjoyed it very much. Mm-hmm. And then one day, she who shall go nameless asked me, what do you want to do for a living? If you could do anything in the world, what do you want to do? And I mentioned to her that, well, since I was like 11 and taught myself to type on an old Royal typewriter, mm-hmm. the kind back in the days where you had to use like a hammer to get the keys to go down.
Yeah.
I still have it.
Do you still pound your computer keyboard?
Well, I use a computer now, mm-hmm. but back then. So anyway, she asked me what I always wanted to do. I said, I always wanted to be a writer. And she said, well, okay, write me a book. And I was like, are you insane? Do you know how long it'll take me to write a book? To what end? No, I'm not going to write a book. So I wrote the book. And then she read the book. And she goes, it's a really good book. You ought to send it off and try and get it published. And I said, are you insane? Do you know how many people send in books and they don't get published? What was it? Like MASH was rejected 22 times or something before it got accepted. I'm not sending off the book. So I sent off the book. And the first publisher I sent it to wanted to publish the thing. So I've been, you know, told you so. For how many decades now? 40 years. Okay, we're good. There.
So you've been a victim of your own success, in a sense. I mean, it's so rare that somebody will get published the first time out.
Evidently it is, yes. Uh-huh. I was lucky. You know, cosmic synchronicity strikes again.
So apparently you love Edgar Rice Burroughs. I mean, talk about some of the other people whose writing you love and who have influenced your work.
Mm. Well, my childhood influences were perhaps more profound than my, perhaps be the norm. I lost my... my dad at a really early age, he was shot.
Really?
And it was, yeah, really traumatic. So since my personal environment was less than ideal, I, as a child, escaped into the worlds of Edgar Rice Burroughs and other fiction. I found them a pleasant alternative to reality. So yes, I was a big, when I was little, ERB fan and Robert Heinlein and a bunch of others.
Rudyard Kipling, too, I understand.
Oh, yeah, Jungle Book. Love those. Rikki Tikki Tavi. Yes, you bet.
I was reading some of your blog stuff about the Jungle Book, because Jungle Book obviously was made into a movie again recently, and you were noticing the differences between the Kipling version and the Disney version.
Well, that's pretty much taken for granted. Mm-hmm. I don't think good old Rudyard and Disney today have the same similar parallel mindset. So, yeah, it was good. I liked it. Did you see the last movie they did for the
I have not. No, I haven't seen that.
Oh, well, good movie.
So you were talking about escaping into the books. I mean, I have to believe that you were doing some writing, though, from yourself from early on. I mean, were you ever writing for your own pleasure?
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. Astute of you. I wrote a couple of books, and one of them was a poetical opus that I was very big into poetry in my younger years. You know how we get into, like, the romance of life. 'Tis the East, and Juliet is the Dawn. Well, I was big on Byron, some of the others. So, yes, I did write some books. And then when I was living on the street in the Twin Cities, I destroyed it all one day in a fit of pique that reality wasn't being nice to me. So then later started up again when, you know, she asked me to write her the book.
This is the She Who Shall Rename.
Yeah, I had like a pile of books, like you can't see this, but about a foot and a half high, mm-hmm. the stuff I had done, my writings, and it's probably best for the world that I did. We didn't lose any, you know, Poe quality classics.
How do you do it? I mean, that's the biggest question anybody's going to ask. I mean, 321 is it now? Is it the current number of published?
Oh, I think I sent you to cover the New Martian book, so I guess it's 322 that I can acknowledge. You also sometimes ghost books that you do for others. But anyway, yeah, 322 published novels. I think it breaks down to average of 10 published novels a year for 30 years. Time eyes up when we're getting the gray hair. So,
yeah.
So how do I do it? Suppose imagination has a lot to do with it. Passion has a lot to do with it. If you're doing something that you love to do, you know, in fact, you love to do it. So discipline, too, because my normal work ethic is when I'm writing, it's from 7 in the morning until 2 a.m. I usually work. I take breaks to, like, eat and associate with real other beings. You know, hey there, whoa, I'm still alive. I just love writing, I guess.
Okay, we'll learn more about the love of writing of David Robbins, which must be considerable, you know, these written 322 books. We'll come back and talk more with David, and if you'd like to join us, we'll take phone calls and emails from you when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking to a rarity on the planet Earth. David Robbins is an author, a published author, which would be a significant enough thing by itself for a lot of people, but he's been a published author 322 times by the latest count under his own and several other pen names in a whole bunch of genres from science fiction to westerns, and there's actually some interrelations there that we'll talk about. But you can join the conversation on the Exchange. David lives in the Rogue River area and has come down to the studio for a visit, and you can visit with us at 800-838-3760 over the phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. You mentioned the first book, your wife saying, why don't you write a book? So what was that first one?
It's hopefully no longer in existence, because later I tried to buy up every copy I could and throw them in the incinerator. No, I'm just joking. It was a book called Blood Cult, about a young lady who's abducted by a religious cult, and then her family and others go in to try and extract her out. At the time, it was a very prevalent news item. There was a lot in the news about cults and people being brainwashed and all this, so I thought it might make an interesting first novel.
Was there a sequel to that? Did it end up becoming a series? I mean, so many of the other things you've done are in
series. Oh, no, that was a standalone.
Really?
That was one of my standalone. Mm-hmm. I actually do have like a few standalones here. I don't know, 40, 50 of them, I guess. Maybe a little more. Mm-hmm. So that was my first.
So is there a formula for each genre? I mean, is that one of the things that makes the process easier? We think that, you know, it's kind of like this, you know, we start like this, we get a middle like this, we get an ending like this. Is it, am I making too much of a formula out of this?
Not necessarily. Different genres have somewhat different requirements. Every novel you write you have to go into plot, structure, characterization, all the different elements to go into making a successful novel that keeps the reader turning the page, page after page after page. For different genres, you just look at what the reader wants. If you're writing a horror book, you want to scare their, you know, silly. Westerns, bang, bang. And science fiction, something that hopefully kindles a spark of imagination or, oh, wow, interest. Yeah, so it depends on the genre and what you're trying to achieve for the reader.
The different names that you've used over the years, is part of that to make a name that sounds more like somebody who'd write in that genre or something? You're making a face like it's not something you really wanted to do.
I never, never intended to end up with a dozen pen names. Had it been up to me, it would just be me. But back when I was doing a science fiction series called Endworld, the editor contacted me and said, we'd like to publish other of your stuff. Can you write other genres too? I said, sure, I can. Of course. I had a family to feed. I would have written anything, you know. But they said, well, okay, what would you like to do? So I thought about it and said, well, I've always loved the West. I would like to do a Mountain Man series. They said, okay, cool. Let's do a Mountain Man series. So I write the first book. I send in the first Mountain Man book.
And it's like King of the Mountain?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And they contact me and say, oh, we love it. We want to publish it. But what name do you want to publish it under? I said, what are you talking about? We'll publish it under, you know, David Robbins. What do you want? Wolfgang. No, we have an issue with this. And I said, what's the issue? Okay, you're popular right now among science fiction readers. This is like Western, Mountain Man. So we don't want to confuse the readers. Confuse them how? Well, if they see that you've written science fiction and Mountain Man series, it might confuse them. Confuse them how? What we'd like to do, I never got a clear-cut answer on this, what we'd like to do is have you use a pen name for your series, so it seems like there's two authors, one doing each series. That way the readers aren't confused. Confused them how? I never did get a concrete answer, but anyway, I said, okay, if you want to do it, we'll do it. And that's how I became David Thompson. But I did it as an homage to a Canadian explorer by the name of David Thompson, who traveled all over back when there was no one anywhere, just Native Americans and the animals. And I read his journal and admired the man so much, I used his name as an homage for my Mountain Man series.
I guess you had to pick a pen name. That was a good way to do it.
Yes, yes.
So that was King of the Mountain, which led to Lure of the Wild and Savage Rendezvous and Blood Fury. And
75 Tama. Books.
75, is
about,
it?
Yeah, 75 books. And when did the first one come out? Late 80s. So mm-hmm. We're talking about nearly 30 years later. It's still being published.
Is there, I mean, obviously you're able to move across genres pretty easily. I mean, we've got the Endworld series, which is science fiction, Blade, which is related to that. You got suspense, you got horror novels, you got White Apache, you got some Davy Crockett novels here.
Science fiction, just did three Battlefield Mars, to which I must thank NASA for the inspiration for that. Do you ever go online, look at NASA photographs of Mars?
Yeah, I do.
Well, a few years ago, you might have seen it. They had what was called, if you go online, like on YouTube, you can see where people post pictures of what they call like gorillas on Mars and, you know, praying mantises on Mars. Well, there was this one fascinating image of what was somewhat jokingly called the Martian crab. It shows something hanging like on a rock next to what might be a cave. And I blew it up and it looked so much like a crab that inside my head, this little light bulb went up. Ooh, crustaceans. Intelligent Martian crustaceans. They live underground. We have colonies on Mars. They get irate. Off I went with Battlefield Mars. Their species against ours in an epic throwdown. Who wins? WWE? No, that's what inspired that.
I did look at the cover of the Battlefield Mars books, and you got a great artist on there. These are quite well-imagined intelligent crustaceans.
Yes, the publisher's down in Down Under, of all places, in Tasmania. They're great people to work with. So, science fiction, too.
David Robbins is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's written 322 novels, he thinks the count is right now, under a bunch of different names and in a bunch of different genres. I did read parts of some of the Westerns. You do write in short sentences, very much like a broadcast writer, and it turns out you do have a background in broadcasting. Is it by design, or is it a feature of the genre?
Some sentences, I would say preponderance, are short. Well, they've done, like they do with everything, they've studied the technique and the science of writing and broken it down into what retains interest more, the structure of the sentences, how long the average sentence should be to appeal to the reader and stuff. And I remember years ago reading that like 9 or 10 words in a sentence was often considered ideal, but you have to structure it so that you have a variety, not just, but yes, especially if you're going for an action scene, if you make a 50-word sentence, it might tend to mitigate against the flow of what you're going for.
It's got to be the bullet grazed his forehead, you know, that kind of stuff.
So I try to adhere to the structure of my novel to make the entertainment value that much more appreciable for the reader.
Do you write sequentially? I mean, do you do one novel at a time, or can you, for example, write one of the Westerns while you're writing a science fiction thing?
Well, right now I'm working on three books at once, so I'll have to say that I guess I can work on different books simultaneously, which isn't that exceptional. I remember reading about a writer in the pulp age back in the 20s and 30s. He had like a card table, and he had four typewriters, one on each side of the typewriter, four chairs, and he would work on four books at once. Get up, work on one, work on the other, get up and work on the other one. So it happens that way.
So I mean, do you have to, like, you know, kind of get yourself out of the, I mean, do you write in the same genre with three books at one time?
No.
No.
At the moment, I'm doing science fiction, horror, and a Western, so no. Uh-huh. Depends.
So how different are the styles? I mean, we talked about the short, punchy sentences for action sequences and things like that. But I mean, is science fiction like a whole different way of approaching the sentence structure and how the paragraphs come together?
Style can vary. Again, I think depending on the type of novel and what you're trying to get across, it depends a lot on. The heart of the novel, the structure should relate to what you're trying to convey. How to put this? Edgar Allan Poe wrote on theory and composition of writing, and his, I'm paraphrasing here, would basically fit the structure to the story, making it an extension of the story. So that, like we were talking about horror, you want to inject the horror not just into the overt story, but into the subtext, into the words you use, because the words can conjure images up in our head that can contribute to the feeling of unease and scares that we get from the book. So in that vein, yes. Did that make sense?
It did. It did. I have to wonder, though, with this, as much of the writing as you do, I mean, do you ever have a chance to read anybody else's stuff?
Oh, yeah, sure. I love reading. I'm a speed reader, so I may read two or three books a week, maybe more sometimes. I love to read very much.
Speed reader, speed writer, obviously, too. I mean, how fast, I mean, can you? We're talking about finishing a novel in a little more than a month, basically, here. So.
Well, bear in mind, I've been typing since an early age, so I have, like, nimble digits. But there was one time where I applied for a position with a company, and it involved typing. So all the applicants had to go into this room and take a speed typing test. It was myself, and I think 37 ladies. No, I'm exaggerating the number. Okay, so we had the speed that I came in second behind some other lady, but I think my speed was about 114 words per minute. So, yes, I guess typing fast. What I tried to do early on in my writing career was to, and it's impossible to do, because when we're in a stream of consciousness flow, you've noticed for yourself, sometimes our brains are so hyper, we're just flowing along at a million miles an hour. When my ideas are flowing, I try to, as much as possible, disassociate myself from the mental practice of typing the keys and type as fast as I was thinking. Again, it's impossible, but I've discovered that with practice, 3 decades of it, I can actually type rather rapidly while I'm, you know, writing the novel.
When the thoughts are coming that fast, I mean, do you end up with some garbles on the page that you have to go back and fix up later?
Well, I've trained myself at the point, yeah. Mm-hmm. What does Google mean? Uh-oh, got to go back and redo that again. Yeah.
David Robbins is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He lives in the Rogue River area, and he's a novelist primarily. He's written nonfiction books as well, but in all, he's published more than 320 books over the years under a variety of names, which, as you heard, he's not crazy about having to be David Thompson and Jake McMasters and John Sharp and all the others, but lots of work in lots of genres. You can join our conversation on the Exchange. Your questions and comments are welcome at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Grab the headphones there, David, because we got a call for you from Vince in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with David Robbins.
Hi there. Good morning. Yes, I've been a big fan of science fiction for 60 years since I could read. And I was wondering if any of your science fiction books have been turned into movies or used as a treatment for a movie, because with the disability I have now, it's very difficult to read a book, and I find I can watch a movie for 2 hours to get the story much better.
Mm-hmm. Understood. This I would have to file under, I wish. None of my science fiction books have been made into movies as of yet. I did have a Hollywood agent for a while, but that turned into high comedy more than fruitful enterprise. So none at the moment.
You have done some movie adaptations, though, right? So you're writing the book after the movie script has been finalized?
Not always finalized. Sometimes the way it'll work, they'll send a writer an early script. So if you see a novelization, it will often include scenes that do not end up in the movie. Sometimes it provides more background on characters and things like that. So, yes, three of them. There was Men of Honor, mm-hmm. the one with Robert De Niro and Cuba Gooding Jr., and there was Twisted with Samuel Jackson, who admittedly is nearly in every movie made these days, and Proof of Life with Russell Crowe, and who was the lady? Having a brain blip. Anyway, yes.
But Twisted, Proof of Life, and Men of Honor. Okay, movie adaptations. Yeah, that's a bit different from what you usually do, which is coming out of your own head. It's somebody else's story, basically.
Oh, sure, yes, and a lot of research as well, especially with Men of Honor, because I wanted to catch everything that the original writer stuck into, so that it stuck as true as possible to his own experience and his own reactions to his experience. So, yeah, it was a bit different.
When you were talking about the research just now, then, and I wonder about the difference in genres. I mean, obviously, with Westerns, the Wilderness series, that sort of stuff, you can find out about things that happened to real people ages ago. When you're dealing with science fiction, you're dealing with people in the near and far future in situations that haven't happened yet anyway.
Yeah.
How different a process is that?
Well, fortunately, I also love research. I love finding out stuff, new things, new discoveries as much as I do the writing. So it's basically the same, but it is different. For the Mountain Man series, I read every Mountain Man journal that I could find that actually written by them, as opposed to what people said they may have thought and done. I wanted to see what they really thought and did. For something like the science fiction series on Mars, you research everything you can on our current understanding, on our current scientific capability, and project ahead a little bit to, a couple centuries to where we have our colonies. Some writers were, back in the day, marvelously good at that. Like Robert Heinlein was really good. Arthur C. Clarke was really good at, projecting ahead to what might be.
Mm-hmm. So the diaries you're talking about, the journals, David Thompson, who you took the name of for the mm-hmm. Wilderness series, was you mentioned him as a Canadian mountaineer. Was he a good journal keeper? Was he one of the ones?
He was very meticulous.
Really?
It was very, very well done. Some of them were. You'd be surprised. There was a man called Zenas Leonard, Jedediah Smith, and a bunch of others that wrote their own, and they wrote really well. And some of the insights were very profound. It was more than just like, scratching and grunting kind of fellows getting together to, pass the whiskey there. There was more to some of them than would have seemed apparent. And so I made my mountain man more, tried to make him as intelligent and profound as a mountain man could be.
The Jedediah Smith you mentioned, is that the Jedediah Smith for whom the Smith River is named?
Yeah.
Okay,
he got all over the place, yes. He traveled quite a bit before he was ultimately killed, but yes.
We have another phone call for you. Let's go to Tom in Jackson County. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with David Robbins.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Congratulations on Imagination, David.
Oh, thank you.
Impressive. I have a question. With the pseudonym, is there a legal issue involved for banking and all that, or can you just apply the same social, or how does it go?
A legal issue in terms of the pen name?
Yes.
They talked about going to banks and stuff. I mean, they don't write the checks to David David Thompson, for example, do they?
It depends on if it's your own pen name or if you're writing as part of what they call a stable. Like, I've done some Bolin books. Mm-hmm. There was a series that ran for years and years and years and years about Mac Bolin. And they have a pen name, but they have a whole stable of writers. So that pen name is theirs. But if it's your own pen name, something you made up for yourself, like I did for David Thompson or some of the others, then there's no legal issue. When it comes to dealing with legal issues, you would sign all your contracts with your real name, obviously, and the banking issues would all be in your real name. So there's no issues that I can think of at the moment.
Thanks for the question, Tom. Were there any ever any publishing house proscriptions against admitting that you were David Thompson or Ralph Compton or any of the other people?
Back in the day, they would have as part of the contract, in fact, that you should not go around broadcasting that you were, say, doing the Bolan books or doing some of the others. They would prefer that you didn't because they wanted to project the illusion to the general public that all these books were being written by whatever pen name they were using.
Oh, so the staple stuff, they wanted to make sure you were.
Yeah, but they did let you use it as part of like an advancement for your career if you wanted to let somebody know you were writing and doing that. That was okay.
All right, we'll take a short break here on the Jefferson Exchange. David Robbins is our guest. He's the author of more than 320 books, most of them novels, and a lot of genre fiction here. We'll come back and talk more with David. And if you'd like to join us once again with more phone calls and emails, we'll take those as well. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with David Thompson at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Program returns in a minute 30. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest is David Robbins, who lives in the Rogue River area. He is a novelist on a big scale. I mean, we're talking not just dozens of books, but hundreds of them. David has written more than 320 books under his own name and a variety of others, a lot of genre fiction, science fiction, westerns, as White Apache series as Jake McMasters and Davy Crockett as David Thompson, And, the Trailsman books as John Sharp. I just have all kinds of stuff to talk about here with David. And you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We're talking about imagination and what it takes to – a lot of research goes into your work, both the Westerns and the science fiction stuff you mentioned, to figure out where we stand right now and what might happen in the future. But you're essentially kind of constructing a world, aren't you? Like in the End World series, I mean, you're certain properties or recurring players that are always going to be there.
A world or a universe? Because now I have what I call the End World universe. Because since all the books are my own, I connected. You know, the Mountain Man books that we were talking about, and then End World set hundreds of years in the future after Armageddon. They're all linked now, along with the White Apache series that you mentioned and several others. In a genealogical timeline.
So the people in the End World series are the descendants of?
The Mountain Man in the Mountain Man series. Mm-hmm. The great, you get the idea.
Uh-huh.
Grandfather of Blade, who is one of the protagonists of the science fiction series. So I linked them all together in this own universe. And yes, it's great fun to create your own universe, create your own world, and have all these populated with wonderful and fascinating or sometimes dire and dastardly people. So, you know, it's great fun.
Does it create some constraints, though? I mean, like, do you have things like certain genetic diseases that crop up like every couple of generations that started in the Mountain Man books and show up in the End World series?
Jeez, I didn't think of that. I probably could have gave him familial hemiplegic migraines, something to which I could relate, have all of them suffer migraines at the most inopportune moment, you know, when a mutant's about to devour them. Oh, wait, I'm having a migraine. No, that's a good idea. I might use that. Thanks. Okay.
Well, you've managed to make migraines funny. I don't know how you did that, but but it is something that's really happened to you in your own life. In fact, you showed off the aviator shades. If people look at our Facebook page to look at the picture of you, you're wearing the aviator shades.
They're progressive. They're prescription as well as prescription, because I read a long time ago that somebody wrote that supposedly if your eyes are extremely light sensitive, you can get a certain type shade tint of sunglass, and it will lessen the frequency of your migraines. I thought, I don't know about it, but I gave it a try. And for me, it worked. I've encountered people say, oh, it's, you know, really skeptical about it. But it did for me. It cut down the frequency of my migraines. And so I kept on doing it. And plus, I was in the Air Force, and I think aviators. And, you know, Snoopy used to, you know, look cool in his sunglasses. So, yeah.
But it runs in the family, apparently.
Yes, it does. My dad, his dad, and both my sons. My one son in particular has really severe ones sometimes. So, yes.
You mentioned the schedule that you keep, you know, 7 a.m. to 2 a.m., obviously a few breaks here. And then you'd be able to, I mean, do you get to have much of a life outside of the writing? I mean, did you get to go to your kids' Little League games and stuff like that?
Oh, sure. I coached soccer for 10 years. You still have a life. You know, you take a break for food and the essentials. Like, you know, if you have a family, you have to relate to them and do things family-wise. So, yes, I still have a life.
Has it been lucrative for you? I mean, has it paid reasonably well? I mean, has it been better than working in radio, for example, which you did before?
Back in the day, I don't know what it is these days, but back in the day, by and large, radio was not the highest paying profession that they had. So segueing into writing did prove more lucrative than had I stayed in broadcasting. This became like, you know, some superstar, but... So, yeah, I like doing it. The money was never a primary factor, but again, it was the passion for something that you love to do. It is so much preferable, enriches your life so much more than a rut. You know, having a job that, and we've all had them, jobs we don't want. We trudge in every day. We mouth our words. By rote, we come home. We think, oh, boy, this is my life. So when you're doing something you're excited and passionate about, it's all the difference in the world. You wake up excited. You want to do it. You want to create worlds. You want to have fun.
Are there still new worlds that are cropping up? I mean, are you coming up? You mentioned the Mars series. Is that something that cropped up new one day? It's like, hey, let's try this.
That's one. All the time they crop up. Mm-hmm. I'm real big on imagination. Recently, I started a series called Angel You, about angels. I tell people it's basically an homage and kind of a retelling of Milton. And I've discovered that apparently Milton isn't studied as much as it once was because Milton? Who's Milton? Never mind. It's okay. Paradise Lost? Paradise Regained? What's that? Never mind. Okay, we're good. So yeah, imagination. I love to feed my imagination so that I can create with my imagination.
If somebody had asked you to imagine, say, 40 years ago, that you would have written 300-plus books at this point in your life, would you have been able to imagine that?
No, I wouldn't have conceived it. I wouldn't have projected that far ahead because you never know. It's all now. We use the now to create what comes. And I had no inkling. I'm not Nostradamus. I had no inkling what was down the road. You know, you can always hope. But no, I never anticipated writing 300-plus books.
Is there a David Robbins fan club then? I mean, are there people who they have to read every book you write?
Well, there's some. I have fans on Facebook, and there's a David Robbins fan club, and there's some other thing going on. There was a Yahoo fan club once. I don't know if anybody uses Yahoo. Oh, sorry, anymore. So yeah, there's some out there. I do have some fans and hear from them quite a bit. It's a lot of fun.
How much feedback do they give you? I mean, do they give you hell when they think you've done something stupid to a character or killed one off or something like that?
Well, I did get an interesting, I wouldn't call it a fan mail, but when this was some years ago when I first started, and I got a really irate letter from a gentleman who was upset that I had one of my lead, my main characters in one of my series who was... I have to bring this up because he did. Was white. He took up with the young lady who was not white. So the individual sent me a real charming letter in which he threatened to rip out my entrails and do other things to me. And then when I had him investigated, it turned out he was actually like a convict in Florida, I think it was. And it was quite humorous. But he really liked my books. So...
I haven't asked about sales figures. I mean, what's been your top seller over out of all of these?
I honestly don't know. I never kept track of it. I never royalty checks come in, and you get your initial, you know, payment, your advance. I have never, that I know of, looked to see what was my best seller.
So ultimately, it's really about just doing something you love to do.
And passion again for something you love to do. Yes, if you do it, Van Gogh, well, chop off an ear, don't get any money, but hey, it's fun.
Unlike Van Gogh, though, you're actually making some money at this in your lifetime.
Well, yes, yeah, enough to have my family.
And your ears are intact, I should point out.
In all springs, yeah. Mm-hmm. Last I looked, yes.
Mm-hmm. How many kids do you have and how old are they?
Two. One is over 30, one is slightly under 30. Great sons, great people, great men.
Mm-hmm. Do they live in Oregon?
One does. Mm-hmm. The other went off and seeking his adventures. I think he's in Southern California right now.
How did you end up in Oregon yourself? You're not from here originally. You mentioned being in radio in Kansas, and I think you were in Colorado after that.
I ended up in Oregon because of what I euphemistically call hairy farts. Can I use that word on air? Farts,
yes.
Is that okay?
Yes. Yeah, we don't need to use the dump button for that one.
Long time ago, I belonged to something called the International Society of Cryptozoology, which was scientists and others who go looking for unknown species like, you know, salamanders, mud puppies, or Sasquatch. And I ended up going on a couple of expeditions looking for the hairy farts in the Pacific Northwest. And then my wife decided she loved the Pacific Northwest and, you know, wanted to move up here. So yeah, that's how.
How long ago was that?
I ever run into one in the woods, I'm going to kick it.
Sasquatch. Without Sasquatch, David Robbins is coming for you.
Yes, that was almost 30 years ago. 25, 26.
Okay. Mm. So a bunch of years ago, for
yes.
Sure. Waleed actually wants to know if you taught yourself speed reading, or is it a gift? And do you vocalize the words in your head when you read?
It appears to be, I'm told, that it appears to be just the nature of my mind. It's a gift. I was never taught it, but I can do it. Same reason when I do my book. Sometimes we talked about structure of books. Sometimes I will plot out an entire book. But often I just say to my head, I'd like a book on so-and-so. And then it's like a microwave. You know how you stick it in for 3 minutes, your microwave bings, done. My brain or my creative muse says, bing, your book's ready. And I sit down, start typing, and out it pours with no notes or nothing. So it's probably largely my brain for what brain I have.
So
that helps.
This sounds akin to what Mozart was credited for, that he could compose an entire symphony in his head, and although he didn't know the sound of a microwave back then, but he'd get the bing effect. And
Tesla did the same thing with his. I didn't think about that.
Nikola Tesla, yeah.
Well, I'm hardly Tesla or Mozart, but that's how it works sometimes. I would say more often I do it that way than I do the structuring. I wrote a book called The Return of the Virginian and structured it for 6 months. I much prefer the microwave technique. You know, hey, your book's ready. Okay, let's eat. Quick. Book's done. Up we go. Let's move to the next.
So a lot of times it is. You're really trying to get out of the way of your own hands, or you're trying to get your hands out of the way of your mind.
Well, I try to get it out as quickly as I can because my brain, you know, gets done with it. So, yes.
Have you ever tried dictation to somebody else or dictate into a tape recorder and come back and have somebody else type it down later?
I did try it. I got one of those, you know, when you had the software where you can like translate and, you know.
And we all know how great those are from text messaging.
Oh, yes. No, Ethiopia, not eggnog. that didn't go too well because it went so slowly that my brain is going, what are you doing to me? What are you doing to me? Let's go faster than this. So no, I don't do that.
How ruthless an editor are you of your own works? I mean,
I try to be as ruthless as possible. Mm-hmm. I go through every one at least three times once I get it done. Mm-hmm. That's where the speed reading comes in handy. So I edit at least three times and try to make it as perfect as I can. Often miss stuff sometimes, you know, it's what they have editors for, but I try.
You're old enough to remember the Evelyn Wood speed reading system.
It brings back memories from back in the day. Yes.
Yeah, with the people with the finger scanning down the page.
Oh, yes.
Is that about how fast you can read? I mean, you talk about being able to read really fast.
Well, I don't know if I can do it Evelyn Wood speed, but I guess I can read 200 pages in, I don't know, about an hour, maybe less. That's if I'm taking my time. So something like that. That's not, I don't think, exceptionally fast.
Wow. So whose work do you like? Who's writing now?
Right now?
Yeah. Aside from your own.
Who am I reading right now? Wow, I'm having a brain blip. I'm trying to think, when was the last time I haven't read something that, because I've been on a past spiel lately, been reading Heinlein and Robert E. Howard and a bunch of others. I did read the Harry Potter books, and, you know, they were nice. I cannot at the moment think I'm having a complete drawing, a complete blank. Sorry.
I noticed that you have blogged a bit about the work of other science fiction writers and filmmakers, and you had high praise for Carl Urban playing Judge Dredd in the movie from 2012.
Oh, yeah.
Carl Urban has been great as Dr. McCoy.
He's great, great. Yes, I love Carl Urban. He's a great actor, and I love the Dredd film, too. I do. I try to blog about things that I think are fun. I don't want to bore people, so I talk about books, talk about movies, things that they might be passionate about, like I was.
The riff on Judge Dredd, and in fact, you also talked about the Batman Superman movie, I believe, which raises the question. I mean, that we've got so many comic book movies out there. I mean, we've got like a third Spider-Man series now.
Yeah, we just went and saw the new Spider-Man, mm-hmm. which is highly hilarious. But right now superheroes are in vogue. For how much longer? Who knows? You know, mm-hmm. we go through, as you've been around long enough. We go through one after the other. So, yes.
Is there a genre you haven't done yet that you want to do? I mean, that you just you haven't touched on yet that you think, it's time for me to get into this? Because you've done mystery, you've done horror, you've done, you even did a Hardy Boys mystery, didn't you?
Yes, I done mystery, horror. No, I can't think of one because, maybe I haven't written any strict romances yet, but I put romances in a lot of my books. There's always romance going on. So I guess I don't really need to write a strict romance. Mm-hmm. No.
You come back to some of the same characters over and over again through your books, and I just wonder if it's kind of like revisiting, they're like family members to you now, in a sense?
Well, if you write like Wilderness for 75 books in how many decades, you get to know the characters, you get to know what they would do in given circumstances, and so that makes it contextually better, and it's not you, it's the character. So yes, you do get to know them like they're good friends.
Wow. So, do you anticipate a retirement date or anything? Is this going to keep going on as long as there's an imagination there?
Well, that, and we had a new house. Someone wanted a new house built not that long ago, so I've calculated I'll be able to retire when I'm 117. So, body, you hear that? Hold out, buddy.
Okay.
We're good.
Many more works to come from David Robbins, 322-plus books at this point, and more on the way. David Robbins lives in the Rogue River area. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much, Jeffrey, for having
me. Pleasure to have you.
Had a great time.